I decided to double down on my religious symbols today. So up here, I've got the little comma. So there's a little comma, and it's got rainbow colors on it. And the comma is a fairly new symbol in the United Church of Christ, maybe, I don't know, 15 years? 10, even? It's part of what we call the Still Speaking campaign, a way to say that God is still speaking. And we quote the comedian Gracie Allen when we say, "Never place a period where God has put a comma." The Bible is not the end. God is still speaking. And so we wear these little commas. And I wear a rainbow comma so that people see it, know that I and my faith community is a safe place for people who are parts of the queer community. And I wear this almost every day. It makes for very interesting conversations. I know some of you have started to wear safety pins. I challenge you to wear this with it. But this image on my stole, if I can get it lined up, is the original symbol of the United Church of Christ when we formed in 1957 as a larger denomination. So what you can see on it is a cross. I think it's also on the cover of your hymnals. That word was gone. Okay. So you can see there's a cross, and it is crowned, and it is sitting on top of and part of the world. So we've got a cross crowned on top of and over the whole world. It's a very regal, a very universal symbol. And I'm wearing it because today is what we call Reign of Christ, or Christ the King Sunday. For churches like ours that use a traditional schedule of seasons and holidays, today serves as a bridge between ordinary time, which is exactly what it describes, ordinary time, and Advent, which begins next week and is the first day of the Christian New Year. So today is kind of like our New Year's Eve. And on our New Year's Eve, we like to remind ourselves, we mark it by reminding ourselves to whom we are loyal, the Christ, and in whose world we live, God's. Which is pretty easy for me to forget on a daily basis. Because in my daily life, where am I living? City of Ames, State of Iowa, United States of America. My leaders that I see within the community and nation I live in are the mayor, Ann Campbell. We've got Representative Lisa Heddens. Our governor is Terry Branstad. At the national level, our senators are Joni Ernst, Chuck Grassley, and our representative is Steve King. Now, those leaders are not like the rulers of old and the rulers in our Bible. They're not religious leaders. And they are not anointed by God. They didn't inherit their positions, nor can they bequeath those positions to their children. They're just our neighbors. They are just regular people with regular families, or as regular as families can get, right? With regular homes, who probably also like to go eat at the cafe up on Stang, right? These are regular people. They aren't all easy to get to. Lisa Heddens was, until last summer, next door, which was terrific. She worked on the second floor of our education wing because she ran People Place. And now she's just around the corner running NAMI, the National Alliance for Mental Illness chapter here in Ames. And I feel like I run into the mayor everywhere. I see her here for memorial services. I see her at events for other nonprofits. Very accessible. Our city council's very accessible. But for the rest, there's a bit of staffing and geography that separates us once we really get beyond the city level. It's almost as though the regular people who courted us for these jobs, the more power we give them, the less time they have for the regular people who can take their jobs away. So even though we don't have royalty, at a certain level, at a certain scale, it can feel like our leaders are functioning at a princely level, at a princely distance. This was a similar problem for Isaiah of Jerusalem, the Isaiah that we meet today. In the book of Isaiah, there are actually two or even maybe three Isaiahs. This is Isaiah of Jerusalem, and he lived in the 8th century before the Common Era. And the big issue of his day is that Israel was at threat, under threat of being conquered by the Assyrians. Isaiah of Jerusalem was a wealthy man. He wasn't one of our impoverished prophets. He was a wealthy man, but that didn't give him any more access to the king to warn the king of the danger that was coming, or the following king, since King Uzziah died. And he wasn't just worried about being conquered. He had another pressing concern. Isaiah lived in Jerusalem. So did God. In the theology of Isaiah's day, God literally and exclusively lived in the temple in Jerusalem. So not only is Isaiah terrified that the nation will be taken over, but also that they will lose God. Here he is being called as a prophet by angels and by Cole, and has to go out and explain to everyone not only why God is going to let them all die, but why God would let foreigners close the opening between heaven and earth. He's a man who saw God as on a throne, and yet has to explain to the people why they will be ultimately occupied not by one foreign power, but two. Christ the King Sunday started in part or entirely as the result of a kind of occupation, in a way. Now, all the rest of our holidays, Christmas, baptism of Christ, Transfiguration, Easter, Pentecost, they're all scripturally based. All of our big holidays are based on stories about Jesus in the Bible. But Christ the King Sunday didn't start until 1925. In 1925, Pope Pius XI created this feast day for the Roman Catholic Church. Now, why is it that 1,925 years after the establishment of all the other major Christian holidays, would the Pope feel a need to create a day to remind people of who their true ruler is? What was happening in Italy in the first quarter of the 20th century? I know none of you were here then, because you were a young, robust congregation. It was the rise of fascism. In 1921, Benito Mussolini was elected to the Italian parliament, and within 4 years, he had completely abandoned the practice of democracy. Within 4 years, he disbanded democracy. And on Christmas Eve, 1925, he had himself renamed head of government, and then eventually supreme leader. So as one man was trying to get all the terrestrial power he could, another man was saying, oh no, there's another holy universal power. Now, I'm not really trying to, but you may be drawing a connection between that political era and this one. I am not actually trying to do that. This day has been on the books for years. This has always been Christ the King Sunday. This is just what today was going to be about. Because we here as a Protestant church, or Protestant, right? We are Protestants. We're not beholden to the Roman church in any way. We don't have to do what the Pope says, but our forebears recognized that no matter who is in government, we need to always be returning to God. We need to always be returning our attention to God and remembering that the kingdoms of humanity are petty and they are passing, but God's is great and God's is eternal. We can receive that good news in a couple of ways, I think. The easy way or the faithful way. The easy response to the notion of God's kingdom and God being the ruler of all is to say, okie doke, it's all in God's hands. All right, God's will be done. We can watch the unfolding of human history passively. That must have been God's will, we could say. God must have made that thing happen. We can say right back to Isaiah, God must have wanted all your people to die and the temple to crumble. When I picture that kind of theology, what I imagine is people standing loose, slack, mute. As the buildings around them crumble and children run, terrified through the streets, like that famously photographed Vietnamese girl who was made naked and burned by napalm. I don't think that's a faithful response. It's a human response to what happens in our world. It is a human response to say, whew, that's too big for me. That's in God's hands. It's a human response. But I think for those of us who follow the one who healed women and ate with outcasts, that resignation is to bear false witness to God. Here's how we know. All of this fall, we've been presented with these stories of prophets. Moses, Jeremiah, Nathan, Elijah, Jonah, and now Isaiah. And every one of them, even the most resistant, namely Moses and Jonah, because they really did not want the job, each of them eventually said yes to God. Yes, I will bring your people out of slavery. Yes, I will tell the king that his work is about faith, not temples. Yes, I will put my daily bread in your hands or that of your strange emissary, the raven. Yes, God, I will go to the worst city in the world. Yes, I will tell your people again how they have fallen short. Week after week, we were presented with these crises in the Bible and God's invitation to other people to respond. And God was really flexible in that process. God is not consistent in how God shows up in these people's lives. God figured out what each of these people needed, each of these men needed, to finally hear God and get to that yes. Our prophets are not superhuman. They too are regular people. And they are a reminder that we keep going back to that God is still speaking. And God is still inviting all of us, reminding all of us, hey, come with me. Hey, we need each other to make earth as it is in heaven. Now, I think very few of us will be approached by angels and branded with coal. But all of us are invited to the role of prophet through this table. When we choose, and it's your choice, when we choose to stand, come out of our pews, physically or in our hearts for those of you who aren't able to come forward, when we make the choice to come forward and receive the tokens of God's love, from strangers and friends alike, we cease to be passive actors in our life and we become active and present in God's prophetic voice. We say yes to God and we hold hands with that child of war. When we say yes to God at this table that was set in sorrow and in hope, we also say no. We say no to any government that presumes to make itself into something more than regular humans who are beholden to the other regular humans who have allowed them the opportunity to govern. So don't ever let any institution tell you it's too big for you to approach. Pope Pius had some very good, dangerous, and pressing reasons to create a holiday, a feast day, to remind people to whom they are allegiant. But no matter the century, no matter what century across 2,000 of them now, no matter the century, the story of Jesus refutes and rejects any power or person that tries to claim they are better than anyone else through finery or through an entourage. Our King, our supreme leader, is a baby in a manger, a preacher on the mount, a criminal on the cross, and the eternal emanating holiness that can never be arrested and killed. Our King will find us again, as God always has, and God will find a way to speak to our hearts again and again and again, so that we recognize the power we have through God and the responsibility to say no to any leader or person who betrays the covenant that is love, to do the hard, faithful work of bearing witness to love. To be the builders of God's beloved community and lead each other again out of slavery. Amen.